IV Whitehall, Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Monday, April 1st. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
The legislature has pushed back the state budget deadline. A disagreement over increasing criminal penalties for retail theft is one of the main issues.
A program that aims to increase the pool of non-U.S. doctors who can work in the North Country is opening up to cardiologists and other specialty doctors.
We have been hearing for years and years how much of a crisis not having enough healthcare providers in rural settings is.
And UVM announces the winner of its first VT Pitch Challenge later this week. It's a contest for high schoolers around the world to develop business ideas for their communities. The finalists include teens from the North Country and Vermont. All of that and more is coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Adirondack Experience, the museum on Blue Mountain Lake, presenting their new Eclipse Experience Zoom series on select dates in March and April. Details at theadkx.org. And by Apothecary Chocolates, making gourmet chocolates by hand from all-natural herbs, botanicals, and tree syrups. Apothecarychocolates.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. State police found two bodies near the Canadian border in Clinton County last week. Authorities say Border Patrol agents were conducting a routine search in the woods in Moores, which is northwest of Plattsburgh. That's when they found the bodies of two 25-year-old men from Senegal. An autopsy determined they died from hypothermia. The case remains under investigation. It comes 3 months after a 33-year-old woman from Mexico drowned in the Great Chazy River. Authorities have said she had crossed into the U.S. illegally. Clinton County Sheriff David Favreau told the Plattsburgh Press-Republican that the issue of migrants trying to cross the northern border continues to be a problem. He says it's distressing to see people die in the attempt.
The Olympic Regional Development Authority and the town of North Elba are renewing a lapsed lease agreement for the Lake Placid's Olympic venues. As the Adirondack Daily Enterprise reports, the prior operating agreement expired in 2007, but staff turnover led the town and order to continue their arrangement informally for the last 17 years. The town currently pays ORDA a flat rate of $500,000 per year. The town and ORDA started working on a new agreement in February, but not without controversy. The chairman of the Lake Placid Sports Council, Jeff Aaronstone, resigned this month after criticizing the way town supervisor Derek Doty was renegotiating the agreement. He said the LPSC and the public should have more input. Doty disagreed and said the public will be involved once the agreement is further along.
Last week, the Messina Hospital was officially approved as a critical access hospital. The designation reimburses rural hospitals for Medicare services at a higher rate and could add up to millions of dollars in savings per year. Officials say the shift will improve the hospital's financial health without changing prices or services for patients. Messina's hospital previously applied for the designation in 2019, but was denied. Many North Country hospitals have applied for and received the critical access designation in recent years. They include Alice Hyde in Malone, River Hospital in Alexandria Bay, Lewis County General Hospital in Lowville, and Elizabethtown Community Hospital in Essex County.
A program that aims to increase the pool of foreign doctors who can work in the North Country is still in its early stages. The region is dealing with a severe shortage of all types of medical professionals. As Kara Chapman reports, an expanded visa category will make it easier to attract specialty doctors.
According to the Association of American Medical Colleges, the U.S. could be short by up to 86,000 physicians by 2036. North Country healthcare facilities are already feeling that.
We have been hearing for years and years how much of a crisis not having enough healthcare providers in rural settings is.
That's Liz Cross. She's the Rural Healthcare Coordinator for the Northern Border Regional Commission, or NBRC. That's a federal state agency that serves distressed counties in the Northeast, including the entire North Country. One of the ways governments and healthcare facilities have tried to address the doctor shortage is by expanding the pool of non-U.S. doctors who can work in underserved areas. Here's how it works. Most international med school students come to study in the U.S. under what are called J-1 visas. Cross says they stay and work here as they complete their residency programs. Some are offered jobs in rural areas.
But they're not able to take those positions because immigration currently requires you to return home for 2 years.
That is, unless they get a waiver and agree to work in an underserved area like the North Country for at least 3 years. But that's been a tough pathway in the past. Usually, each state can recommend up to 30 doctors per year to get those waivers. That's not a lot of slots for a state like New York, which has hundreds of hospitals and health centers. Back in December, the NBRC launched its own waiver program that doesn't have a cap. But at first, it was only open to primary care doctors and psychiatrists. Cross says that's because those applications are simpler.
We wanted to take a little bit of time to make sure we had the process completely ironed out before we kind of opened it up to the wider scope to include specialty care.
That time has now come. Starting today, Cross says specialists can also apply for one of the NBRC's waivers.
Once we opened a specialty care on April 1st, we're expecting to receive quite a few applications from the state of New York.
Cross says the shortage of specialists at rural healthcare facilities really runs the gamut, from cardiologists and gastroenterologists to emergency room doctors. Chris Saunders, the NBRC's federal co-chair, says that in the past, hospitals were often limited to applying for just one waiver each year. Now, with the commission's new program, he says they'll be able to think more broadly about recruitment and make investments in their physician workforce faster.
Instead of an environment where they're having to analyze where are we prioritizing a hire and how does that fit within the broader workforce needs of our health system and health network, they're going to be able to say, well, we could maybe fill multiple slots that are high priority.
Cross says these doctors are highly qualified and well vetted by immigration authorities.
And are going to help fill the gap and get people the services that they need and have been waiting for.
It's unclear exactly when doctors in the waiver program will start working in the North Country. Officials have said that could happen as soon as this summer. Kara Chapman, North Country Public Radio.
Listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's coming up on 8:09. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, teens from Ticonderoga in Vermont are among the finalists in UVM's first VT Pitch Challenge. The school is looking to award a full scholarship to the best entrepreneurial project. And we have more coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Lake Clear musicians Peggy Lynn and Dan Duggan. Northern Light is supported by Village, the Village Mercantile in Saranac Lake, established in 2011 with a mission of community-fueled solutions with essentials for home, camp, and gift-giving. VillageMerc.com, anything but general.
Over Over the four-day Easter holiday weekend, New York State lawmakers let the budget deadline pass. As Karen DeWitt reports, one of the many sticking points remaining in the spending plan is how to crack down on growing instances of retail theft.
Governors in New York often include unrelated policy items in their state budget proposals, and Kathy Hochul is no exception. That's when they have the most leverage with the legislature to get their agenda approved. Hochul is proposing new, stiffer penalties for retail theft, including making it a felony to assault a store employee. She held a news conference with small retail store owners earlier in March.
These individuals are very exposed, especially in a small shop with just one worker. They don't have any way to protect themselves. They're literally on the front line. And under this law, assaulting a retail worker would carry the same elevated penalties that we have in place for assaulting a first responder.
It's part of a $45 million plan that includes authorizing the state police to investigate and prosecute interstate and even international organized retail theft rings. Hochul wants to spend $25 million of that amount to hire more troopers. But Democrats in the Senate and Assembly are reluctant to increase criminal penalties. Neither House included them in their budget plans. Both leaders of the legislature are African American, and they've said repeatedly that they're wary of any criminal justice law changes that could disproportionately impact Black and Brown New Yorkers. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says there are better ways to reduce retail theft, like providing funds for stores to hire more security guards.
What we are trying to do is figure out ways that we can really cut into this retail theft, the organized retail theft, certainly, and also help retail establishments to be able to bolster their security and help local police forces to help them, retailers, to be able to abate the crime. So I think we are all very serious about this, and we don't want any worker hurt anywhere.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says in the past, raising penalties for certain crimes has not decreased the rate of their occurrence. He says it's more important to look at the root causes of crime and improve the education system and provide better mental health treatment.
Be open to talking about organized crime rings that people have, but I just don't believe raising penalties is ever a deterrent on crime. You stop anybody in the street and ask them what's the penalty for assaulting anybody, and they probably won't even be able to answer you.
Senator Stewart-Cousins and Speaker Hastie backed the 2019 bail reform laws. They did agree, though, in last year's final budget deal to include Hochul's proposal to alter that law, and they added back some crimes to the list of felonies that are bail eligible. There's also a larger political context playing out in state budget talks. The 2024 elections will feature several hotly contested congressional races. Democrats are looking to win back four seats that flipped to Republicans in 2022. And suburban voters will be key in those races. Polls have shown that rising crime is a key concern. The head of the state Republican Party, Ed Cox, is already highlighting the Democrats' dispute over cracking down on retail theft. In a statement, Cox took issue with Speaker Hastie's opposition to raising criminal penalties, saying the comments illustrate the Democrats' moral rot. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Glens Falls basketball star Jimmer Fredette will compete in the upcoming Summer Olympics. Fredette was an all-time leading scorer at Glens Falls High School. He was then considered one of the best collegiate basketball players during his time at BYU, where his team made it to the Sweet 16 in 2011. Team USA announced this week that Fredette is one of the players who will compete on its 3-on-3 team in Paris this summer. That's a new half-court style of basketball that was recently introduced at the Tokyo Olympics. Meanwhile, another former Glens Falls player finished his college career over the weekend. Joe Girard III is a senior at Clemson, which was defeated by Alabama in the quarterfinals of March Madness on Saturday.
The North Country's total solar eclipse next Monday will be a once-in-a-lifetime astronomical event. It's also a big tourism opportunity for the region. Lots of local communities will host public viewing parties so people can experience it together. But there won't be any public events in Akwesasne. Lucy Grindin reports.
Cities and towns across the North Country have been planning their eclipse events for months. But Anakwasasne, the local tourism office for the St. Regis Mohawk tribe, decided not to host one. Penny Peters is a manager with Akwesasne Travel.
We weren't sure of the numbers that would be coming to the area, so we were really trying to be really respectful of that with the community and just trying to make sure that the community is able to enjoy the event.
Lots of communities are concerned about traffic. Peter says the main concerns in Akwesasne are that an influx of cars could block emergency vehicles or cause environmental damage.
It's mud season. You know, do you want lots of people out on the grounds right now? And, you know, how much damage is that going to do to the fields, to the area? You know, that's part of a concern.
Peter says they did think about hosting a public eclipse event. Most of the time, it's their job to attract tourists. But she says they ultimately decided they just didn't have the capacity. Still, people are preparing for visitors.
I don't think the community is opposed to it being busy, especially our businesses, especially on the main route of 37. We're definitely preparing for it in terms of having, you know, police and emergency measures at full capacity that day, just in case.
Officials expect hundreds of thousands of people to come to the North Country for the eclipse. Lucy Grindin, North Country Public Radio.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, UVM will announce the winner of the first VT Pitch Challenge on Thursday afternoon. It's a contest designed to inspire entrepreneurship among high schoolers from around the world. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Weather Service says partly cloudy skies with highs this afternoon, 40s, low 50s, 40s in some of the higher elevations, low 50s elsewhere, lows tonight in the 30s, light winds out of the south-southwest today, overnight lows in the 30s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy again, highs near 50, light northeast winds on Tuesday. Then it's going to get a little cooler Wednesday and Thursday. We got maybe some rain or sleet on Wednesday, and then maybe some heavy wet snow Thursday. That sort of spring snow with temperatures in the 30s for highs, and then Friday a high near 40 with maybe a wintry mix, some snow, sleet, rain in the forecast for Friday. Right now in Canton, clouds, 37 degrees.
A high school student will learn this week whether they've won a full scholarship to the University of Vermont. UVM announces the winner of its first VT Pitch Challenge later this week. It's a contest for high schoolers around the world to develop business ideas for their communities. The finalists include teens from the North Country and Vermont. UVM announced the VT Pitch Challenge last fall. It's the school's new entrepreneurial-focused competition that gives high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors from across the world a chance to pitch innovative and impactful business plans, all while competing for cash prizes and scholarships to UVM.
I spoke with Jay Jacobs, UVM Vice Provost for Enrollment Management, about the competition. He says UVM's Entrepreneur Club judged the 150 submissions earlier this year and will mentor the finalists as they prepare to pitch in person at UVM in Burlington on Thursday.
They have been outstanding. They are 10 times more creative than I am. They certainly know entrepreneurship really, really well through their pursuits here at the University of Vermont, both academically and co-curricularly, and have really taken this seriously. It's been fun to watch them be wowed by these high school students' ideas. This is something that we felt the University of Vermont was in a prime position for, to help students. We have had pitch challenges for our current students for some number of years. So this was a really easy extension of that theme on campus. And being here in Burlington, Vermont, while a small city is a tech hub named by the Biden administration, and for years before, you know, have spurred creativity through companies like Ben & Jerry's or Seventh Generation or Beta Technology.
What do you think makes a winning proposal? What are you hoping or sort of expecting to see, or what have you seen in terms of some of the ideas? I mean, climate change or healthcare or economy.
The top five finalists had a number of great ideas, including a nonprofit organization dedicated to help prepare individuals for reentry following release from prison, a nonprofit organization focused on improving youth mental health through snowboarding events, a spinal disc guard, a program to bring functional agriculture equipment to farmers in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and an eco-friendly charging device to combat excessive plastic waste.
Okay, so what is the prize? Essentially, you're paying for this young person's, or these, I'm assuming if it's a team, young people, at least part of their college career.
Yeah, so the top prize winner, which will be named on Thursday afternoon, will receive a full tuition and fees scholarship to the University of Vermont. The second and third place teams will receive a $5,000 check that they can use to start their business, get off the ground. And the fourth and fifth place teams will receive a $1,000 check for the same purpose.
The finalists include a young person from the North Country, from Ticonderoga, which is really exciting considering the fact that this is a, you know, worldwide in scope. That's really cool.
Yep. A student from Ticonderoga is one of those finalist teams that I mentioned. They were working closely with a partner of ours, CFES Brilliant Pathways, College for Every Student Brilliant Pathways, which is based out of Essex, New York. So it was really fun to see some local flair rise to the top of the competition.
Tell me a little bit about Thursday. They'll do last final in-person pitches for their ideas?
We allotted each team 7 total minutes to pitch their idea to the entrepreneurship judges. Each team will be asked about 3 minutes worth of questions from the judges. And over the course of Thursday afternoon, each of the 5 teams will pitch. The judges will go into deliberation for 20 to 30 minutes, and then final prizes will be announced at the end of the day.
Tell me what brings you joy as an administrator, as a teacher.
This is something that we knew that students are craving an opportunity to do. So we decided to just kind of pick it up off the ground and run with it and create this competition for high schoolers across the world. And, you know, at the top, I shared with you the interest that we saw, and we feel like we found something here in year one, and we're really excited to see where future years of the pitch competition goes. You know, campus is really getting behind this. You know, we received calls to help from kind of all corners of the institution. And one of my favorite examples of that is some faculty from our College of Engineering and Mathematical Sciences took it upon themselves to go out and 3D print some medals for the winners that have the Vermont UVM logo on it in green and gold, naturally. So we're excited to see the students' faces when they get to wear those medals Thursday.
Jay Jacobs is Vice Provost for Enrollment Management at the University of Vermont in Burlington. The winner of the first VT Pitch Challenge will be announced Thursday afternoon. Georgia Beat, Don Flemons, and you're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio on this Monday, April Fool's Day. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Todd. Yes, I don't think we plan any tricks for each other. Well, I guess I have to wait till we're off the air to find out more. But yes, so much going on throughout the community, including right here on Northern Light. We want to ask everybody and encourage you to send in your questions, astronomy questions about the total solar eclipse. Almost all of the North Country will be in the path of totality a week from today. We've got so many questions. We know you've got them too. How cold will it get? Why don't total eclipses happen more often? Why is this so rare and special? When will it happen again? Well, astronomer Eileen O'Donohue, you know her, you hear her here on Northern Light, works at St. Lawrence University and at the observatory in Tupper Lake. She will be joining us tomorrow morning right here on the show to answer questions about how a total solar eclipse works. So email your questions to us, news@ncpr.org. Send them in. Listeners have already been sending in their questions. We want to hear from you. Send us an email with your astronomy questions about the total eclipse to news@ncpr.org.
Now, also happening next Monday, a week from today, besides this totality, this total solar eclipse, is our spring fundraiser, the first morning of our spring fundraiser. Here's the thing. We've got these really cool I Survived Eclipse 2024 t-shirts.
Yes.
And bumper stickers. Make a gift this week, kind of a pre-drive fundraising gift to us. Any dollar amount gets you this really cool bumper sticker, or sticker for your fridge, you know, whatever, guitar case. And also, at the $10 per month amount, you get this really cool, locally designed I Survived Eclipse 2024 t-shirt, including 10 really cool memories of the total eclipse on the back. So, any dollar amount gets you the bumper sticker, $10 a month gets you the really cool eclipse t-shirt.
And you can
ncpr.org/give.
Yes. Sorry, I talked over you. ncpr.org/give is the place to go to contribute. Yes, and thank you so much for doing so. You can also wear it while you head to the Tupper Arts Center in Tupper Lake for their art exhibit, Total Eclipse of the Art. They say, join us for a celestial journey into eclipse art. Experience the captivating blend of art and this once-in-a-lifetime event. Local artists will be showcasing their talent. It's all part of the celebration of totality in Tupper that's coming up this weekend. It'll be on display April 4th through the 7th at the Tupper Arts Center. You can find out more at tupperarts.org. And if you're looking to take the little ones to do a craft related to the eclipse, head over to the Ogdensburg Public Library. They'll be learning about constellations and how to make your own. That's coming up this Friday afternoon at the Ogdensburg Public Library. Find out more at ogdensburgpubliclibrary.org. That's it for the show. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for listening. Be well.